This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Caney. On today's show, we'll hear about two investigations underway at the Cincinnati VA Medical Center. But first, as we see daily in news reports, religion and politics are often polarizing topics with neither side being willing to budge. One tool that's being promoted to resolve conflicts is interfaith dialogue, which encourages people to recognize what they have in common and have thoughtful discussions about their differences. Joining us to explore interfaith dialogue are Metropolitan Area Religious Coalition of Cincinnati President Rabbi Margie Meyer, First United Church of Christ Pastor Reverend Dan Wyangeisi, and author and scholar Rabbi Rami Shapiro, who will be the featured speaker at an event next Monday night at First United Church titled The Glorious, Wondrous, and Also Dangerous Work of Authentic Interfaith Conversation. And you can be part of the discussion at 513-419-7100. You can email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And good afternoon, everybody. Glad you could be with us.
Thank you.
Good to be here.
Rami, start us off by explaining, what exactly is interfaith dialogue? What's its purpose?
Yeah, well, I think it's very difficult to define because it's done different ways in different places, and the goals are not always the same. I would say it operates in three ways, and so it has three definitions. On the simplest way is it's people from different religious traditions who simply come together to explain what they believe and maybe why, but certainly what. And everyone comes in with a pretty PC attitude that we're not going to challenge what someone believes. We're not going to disagree with it necessarily. We're simply going to nod politely and say, oh, that's interesting. Okay. And move on to the next speaker. On the second level, I think that's a little more challenging. It's where we look for, in the first one, we tend to look for commonalities. In the second one, we tend to look at differences to see what makes each tradition unique. And then we have a little pushback, you know, why one religion believes one thing and another believes something else. And oftentimes they are mutually exclusive, something you don't deal with in that more PC focus. But what I think makes interfaith conversation dialogue interesting and dangerous is it has the possibility of changing someone's mind. And that, to me, is the third level. That's where I come in without a script. I'm not going to explain what Judaism is. We're beyond that level of conversation. I'm really going to accompany you on your own spiritual journey, discover what you're discovering. And if I'm open, if I'm trusting enough in that process, I could end up actually changing my beliefs. And that, to me, is where it gets the most interesting.
So this is about being completely open-minded, being a blank slate and coming in willing to learn something new then.
I wouldn't say a blank slate.
Right.
But I would say that you come in recognizing that religions are, I mean, in my own way of putting it, religions are like languages. And no language is true or false. No language is superior to any other language. So some languages are more effective at speaking on some topics than others are. Some are better at science. Some are better at romance. But ultimately realizing that they're all human narratives. They're all human products. And the more languages I know, the more nuanced my understanding right. of life is. And the more religions I know, the more nuanced my understanding of life is. So it's not a blank slate, but it's a willingness to expand beyond what I know at the moment right. to include what someone else knows.
Yeah, this is Dan. I agree. There's this expansion and deepening of one's own sense of wonder and joy. And it's rooted in our own tradition, but then in this interfaith conversation, experiences we have, there is this deepening of a sense of joy, compassion, even outrage maybe at the injustices that we see in the world, and we can share that as people of faith. And I think that's a part of what interfaith dialogue can lead us to.
Margie?
I'm glad you brought that up, Dan, because there's another level of interfaith dialogue besides the getting to know and understanding each other's religion is getting to know and understand one another and working together on issues that are of common interests. And that brings us together. So that here in Cincinnati, we've been fairly successful, and there are many groups working together. MARC, which is probably the oldest and most diverse, is almost 50 years, 48 years old, was started right after the riots in the 1960s. And the idea was come together, work together, try to help the community, try to figure this out. And we've worked on many issues. We are working on many issues together, 17 different religious groups working together. I think sometimes when you try to get beyond the fact that you are different and have different religions and look at what's needed in the community together, that brings you even closer.
Yeah, good things happen.
Yep. Brings you closer.
But
I certainly don't disagree with. I certainly don't disagree with any of that. This is Rami, and any interfaith group that I've been involved with always has that social action, social justice component. But I think that we could do more than that, in the sense that, you know, when we talk about religion doing good things for the community, that's religion at its best, maybe, and focusing on the ethical. But religion is often not at its best. Mm-hmm. And I think it's important that in these interfaith gatherings, and elsewhere for that matter, that religious leaders own the shadow side of their religious traditions. Yeah. That religion is, has the capacity to make us deeply, deeply just and compassionate, and the capacity to make us deeply, deeply unjust and cruel. And I think unless and until we can look at our own shadow sides and bring them out into the light in an interfaith setting especially, which is very scary to lots of people to say, look, my tradition has clay feet. And unless we can do that, then interfaith simply becomes another kind of another avenue for social work, not knocking social work and social justice things. But there's so much more that needs to be done besides that.
Rami, and I take it that in an interfaith conversation, no one's being asked to discount or leave their beliefs behind.
No. Well, it depends. I've had interfaith conversations where, of course, I'm with a pastor and he says, look, the only way to God is through Jesus. He says so. And if he's not lying, then he's telling the truth. No one gets to the Father except through me, Jesus says. And so, he wants me to drop my beliefs and accept his way. So, I would be insulted if he or, she, in this case it was a he, but I would be insulted if he didn't. I mean, if he doesn't care enough about me to want to save my soul, then why am I talking to him in the first place?
Rami, just to reassure you, on Monday night at my church, you won't get that from me. So.
But that's part of why we have to...
You're
ready.
On the other hand, Dan, I will do my best to convert you.
Yeah, okay.
We've been working on that, Rami.
You might as well be on the winning team.
Yeah.
Margie, go ahead, though.
Jokingly, I said we've already been working on that with Dan. But I think what Rami said, what's important here is that you can't have that conversation that he had with that Christian unless you have reached a certain level of trust and understanding and you really know each other. And that comes from listening to the other person and hearing them and having genuine conversations with them. Then you could get to the point where he could say that and you're not offended, but you're not going to respond the way he wants, and he knows you won't. But if we don't first come together and understand one another and work together, however it is or whatever we're working on, then we won't be able to relate like that. So I think there it's really important for the one-on-one.
Yeah, I think that the part you mentioned about the shadow side and just the it can be very scary for people to enter into these kind of conversations because we say, wow, I've got to look at some of my own judgmentalness or my own fears, my own ways and habits I've done for years. And I've got to examine that, look at that, and as you said, possibly even let go of a lot of that. And that is tough. And
yeah, it's like Rami was saying earlier. Go right ahead, Rami.
I was going to say, it's very tough. It's very difficult. Dan's absolutely right, Mark. The thing, I'll give you a concrete example I think of what Margie is talking about and how it worked out in this one case with myself. I was with a Methodist minister and an imam from our local mosque, and we had been challenged by the newspaper to come up with some kind of statement saying that we unequivocally denounce violence done in the name of religion. And we got together over coffee, and we hadn't even poured the coffee when we had already written the statement, and we were done. I mean, it was obvious that the three of us were in the same of the same mindset that violence done in the name of religion is anathema. So then I said, well, this was so easy. Can we add six words to our statement and say, you know, we, the undersigned, blah, 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 unequivocally denounce violence done in the name of religion in this world and the next? And when I put that one out there saying, let's get rid of hell, why not say, if we're not willing to say that our God wants violence in this world, why do we say that our God wants violence in the next? And while everyone, the other two, my colleagues,
how did that go over?
Say,
not
oh,
very
it did
well.
Not go over well at all.
Not well.
You know, they said, you can't do that. And I said, well, of course we can. And they said, no, that's God's business. And I said, well, those who believe that God wants, you know, heads chopped off and people oppressed and, you know, all this stuff in this world, you're saying that God's not true. Why are we denouncing that piece of theology and not the afterlife violence? And they were adamant that without the afterlife, they had nothing to sell. They didn't put it that way.
But without
the afterlife and without the fear associated with it, it was a marketing gimmick they weren't about to let go.
And this is where we have to really respect other people's traditions, even if privately we would laugh at them or certainly not take them for our own. And this is the difficulty when we're talking to one another, because there are things in the Christian religion that I certainly cannot accept, and I'm sure there are some things about Judaism that people think are very strange as well. But what I want is for them to acknowledge me and my religion and the way I carry out my religion as valid, and I would want to do that for them. It's when we try to get everyone on the same page in terms of our belief that we get into trouble.
Well, it's just human nature, Margie, to say, I know better than you do, right?
Exactly, exactly.
Well, let me be honest. I do know better. And, right? Otherwise, I wouldn't be on the radio.
That is why you're a rabbi and I'm not.
Well, Margie's a rabbi also. So,
and Margie, you know, as well, that's true.
And that's what rabbis do. We just argue with each other. Mm-hmm. But so, Margie, tell me a little bit more about this idea of respect, because I understand, I'm not sure I understand it. I mean, there are certain things I taught comparative religion for 10 years at the university here. I know enough about the world's religions to find things in each of them that are strange, but I don't have any problem with the strange, but things that are evil. And I don't have respect for those. I think those need to be challenged. So when you say respect, how far are you willing to go?
Well, if it's I totally agree with you. If it's something that we think is evil, no. And when we get to the point of debating what is evil, that's when what we would probably be where you are saying it's dangerous. But most of the time, I can stand apart with my co-religionists of different faiths and say, all right, this is what you believe. It's not where I am. It's not what I believe. You go your way and I go mine, and we can remain friends. We can become friends and we can remain friends. You're right. When it leads to evil in any religion, I would hope that the same people who have those other religions would feel the same way as I do. You know, going to the afterlife was a good trick, but since none of us know what's in the afterlife, I think that's all sort of theoretical. It's a little bit harder and more realistic when we look at the evil around us in the world, when we look at what's happening right now in our country and all the nastiness that's going on and how it's getting louder and more nasty. It's becoming very difficult to talk in a civilized way. So I think that's where interfaith dialogue and real dialogue is so important.
We will continue our conversation. Rabbi, hang on just a moment here. We have to take a quick break. We will continue our conversation about interfaith dialogue after this. You can join us at 513-419-7100. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Joining us to explore the purpose and process of interfaith dialogue are Metropolitan Area Religious Coalition of Cincinnati President Rabbi Margie Meyer, First United Church of Christ Pastor Reverend Dan Wyengeisi, and author and scholar Rabbi Rami Shapiro, who's going to be the featured speaker at an event next Monday night at First United Church titled The Glorious, Wondrous, and Oh-So-Dangerous Work of Authentic Interfaith Conversation. Rami, we had to take the break there, but you had a thought that you wanted to get out. What was that?
Well, I was just curious, when Margie was talking about, when we're talking about evil, what's evil and what isn't, and I think we were thinking of not labeling any religion one way or the other, looking at anything specific. But obviously, there's some things that are happening in the world that we would say are evil, that are done in the name of religion, even if the religions want to claim that they're innocent. But my question wasn't so much. It seems to me when a religion, and I think all of them suffer from this because they're all so old and patriarchal, that when a religion is misogynist and a religion is homophobic, and I think, except for the liberal branches of the world's religions, they all suffer from misogyny and homophobia. Those things are evil. And when I see that happening in an interfaith dialogue where, and this is, things that I've experienced, where, someone will claim that, women are somehow intrinsically less human, or, homosexuals should be killed, that's evil, and it's done in the name of religion by people who know their religion. It's not simply people who are ignorant of the religion and using it as a club. These are people who are educated in their religion, pick on things in their religion that are there that are, we'd like to outgrow, but they haven't. And I'm just wondering, at what point do you say no? That's, I can't respect that.
Well, I think you have to say what you feel is your truth, and you have to be open about how you feel about that. I mean, we're fighting certain battles, different groups in Cincinnati, and I'm sure where you are as well, on a lot of levels, whether it be on the homosexual issue or whether it be on women's rights. And we have to stand up. Now, some people will say that's not a religious issue. Some people say that's getting into politics. But then you have this fine line about what is religious, what is the moral issue, what is politics, what is social justice. And you have to live with your conscience. At some point, you have to say no.
Right. As a pastor in a local congregation, and we're in the United Church of Christ, which is seen as a liberal, progressive branch of Christianity. And yet, in a local congregation, that spectrum of people holding on to more conservative beliefs and others a little more liberal, those who are in favor of marriage equality, that exists even within my congregation and within our denomination. And how do we continue to speak to that and stay in covenant with one another? It's a challenge. And this past weekend, we had a female who led our congregation and preached, and she's a member of the congregation, and they absolutely adore her and honor that. But was everyone in church comfortable with a woman leading worship? I think in my congregation, yes, but in other UCC churches, that doesn't happen. Even though there's a lot of women who are ordained in the United Church of Christ, many cannot find pulpits because congregations are still slow to accept a woman in leadership in the religious circles. So,
513-419-7100 if you'd like to join us. And Charles joins us now. Hi, Charles.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thank you.
My point is twofold, and one, I think it's very good the dialogue you're having right now, and it should be held between denominations. But there's two issues that are concerning of me, and one will be an example of what happened in Cincinnati this last summer as a dialogue that has to go, I think, beyond the between the denominations of religion, between those between denominations and the secular community. There is, for instance, in the example, the city was poised. I mean, people may not say it, but the city was poised for social unrest this summer. And the one solution had been original was to provide, at least in those areas or those particular communities where the unrest may have happened, churches or areas of religious worship which had facilities to do curfews for young people. And yet within the secular community was an statement saying, well, no, this is a combination of church and state, blurring the line between the fact that a religious institution as well as other social services, at some point in a crisis in the community, becomes an area of the community. And that
so,
the community itself deal, it must deal together with the crisis. And the other one, which I'll go quickly with, is I do think a lot of the religious movements in the community, as in other communities, towards social improvement is good, but sometimes I also think they're doing it with exclusion of trying to outreach to the secular. And I'm a little worried about this exclusionary approach towards secular, towards social problems.
But I guess the basis of your question is how much should religious groups get involved in addressing social issues? Is that the meat of your question, Charles?
No, I think what's happening is there's a marginalization between the two groups of society. And one's saying maybe churches could be completely, or religious institutions should be completely out of this. And the other hand is, who better in the community can help work with these organizations in many instances to deal with this problem? And the other is, I think, being involved in social issues as religious institutions, they should also maybe cross hands with more secular groups to make a much more unified march. That's my two statements.
Margie, you want to address that? Thank you, Charles.
I think you have an important point there. If I think back to the concrete example you gave of this summer, however, it was the summer, and where else would we have, if we had had to open places for the children to go? We have a situation in Cincinnati where most of our summer playgrounds are closed at night because of lack of funds. We have a situation where the schools aren't open. These are secular in that they are civic places, and we can't get the funds to do what we want. So when the churches open up their buildings and say, we're here, it's a default situation. I would agree with you. There are so many areas that the civic or the community that isn't the religious community certainly could be involved and should be involved. I think in terms of the organizations I represent, both the Jewish Community Relations Council and MARC, both reach out to everyone. And I think if someone who was not part of a religious group wanted to come and help, there'd be no problem at all. I don't see non-religious groups organizing the way perhaps they should. And I don't know what groups those would be other than something like a PTA or some kind of social clubs. And it's just not happening.
Dan or Rami, did you have anything you wanted to add to that?
Rami, go ahead.
Yeah, well, I mean, the only thing I would add, just building on what Margie said, and if we're talking about social issues, then sure, religious and secular, I mean, why wouldn't they find some way to come to common ground on that? I don't see that in and of itself should be a problem. Dealing with specifics in Cincinnati, no, that's not my place to say.
Yeah, and I think locally, the neighborhood, there's a lot of religious groups who do interact with some of the social issues happening in my situation, whether it's Northside or College Hill. We have ministerial alliances and social groups that work with city leaders and the neighborhood about how to address violence, heroin outbreaks, things like that, poverty. And so that does take place, and it's important.
Margie, can you give me a few more examples of areas where the religious community has worked together through interfaith dialogue and had an impact on an issue in the city?
Well, right now, Mark is working together with Catholic Charities on the refugee problem. We are bringing in to Cincinnati about 300 refugees this year, many of them are from Africa, and there is a great need for help for them. So Catholic Charities, which has the contract to with the government to receive them in this part of the state, reached out to us and all of our 17 judicatories, and we're working with them. We're also working with the city to try to come up with some kind of an identification card for any person, any resident in the city who might not be able to get one for whatever reason. So there are lots of areas. One of the big areas right now, just briefly, is the preschool promise that you may have read about and many people have read about in the papers. We're not quite sure what direction that's taking, but there will be something probably on the ballot this coming year to try to get universal preschool for all four-year-olds in the city, at least, if not further out in the county. And Mark is working with many different organizations, secular and political and religious.
513-419-7100. John from Cincinnati joins us. Hi, John.
Yeah, hi. Are you there?
Yes, go right ahead.
Very good. Yes, I'm sort of a religious and a political junkie. And
welcome.
That's a good combination.
I have kind of come to a conclusion. I'm sort of basically post-evangelical, post-Christian almost. And what I find, both in politics and in religion, is that as soon as someone is deeply convinced that they're right, they fall into judgment and probably into, what in my experience, into the behaviors that I really don't like, and I think most of us would agree, you know, where we judge others, condemn, you know, all of those sorts of things. And so I'm a big fan of grace, mercy, love, all of the things that I would say that most faiths would embrace deeply. And that's sort of where I've ended up after spending most of my adult life in the Christian world. I'm just sort of taking some steps back from that. That being said, I've read this great book by Richard Foster. You guys know of him. Celebration of Discipline. He's a Quaker. And it looks at the difference. It's called Streams of Living Water. And he looks at mostly Christian and Quaker groups. And he looks at both their biblical strengths and errors, and does a great job of illustrating that. And from the conversation that you're having, it sounds like that's exactly what you guys are trying to do, is like pros and cons of all sides, and find a middle ground in there where I think there is really a fruitful way to go forward.
Yeah. John, we look forward to seeing you on Monday with Rami.
Yes.
Let's talk with Sally and...
Oops. We won't judge you.
Let's talk with Sally in Montgomery. Hi, Sally.
Hi. I'm a facilitator at Women Writing for a Change here in Cincinnati. And this conversation is just fascinating to me because we are just going to start a class related to this topic beginning next Thursday. It's going to be an 8-week series, and it's called Writing in Community, an Interfaith Women's Writing Circle. And Women Writing for Change offers a very safe space for women to express themselves through writing, and we teach practices which encourage deep listening and honest conversation in a safe space. So let your community know, listeners who are listening to your program today who are interested in this topic, that this might be an opportunity for them to come together and share their ideas in community.
Sally, thank you so much for the call.
You are welcome. Thank you for taking my call.
So who wants to fill us in, Dan, the details of the conference that's coming up on Monday?
Well, there's many things Rami's going to be doing when he arrives, but on Monday night he will be at the First United Church of Christ, 5808 Glenview. It's in College Hill, 6:30, and I believe it'll probably 6:30 to 8:30. Rami will present, open to conversation, questions, and be at our church that night. And then there are some other dates and engagements he has, and I don't have those in front of me, but probably go to JCRC's website and be able to get the itinerary. So,
and we have a link to more information at our website, wvxu.org. So thank you, everybody, for joining me this afternoon.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
Look forward to seeing you, Rami.
Yes.
Me too. Look forward to seeing you both.
Metropolitan Area Religious Coalition of Cincinnati President Rabbi Margie Meyer, First United Church of Christ Pastor Reverend Dan Wyangeisi, and author and scholar Rabbi Rami Shapiro, who's going to be featured speaker at the event next Monday night at First United Church. That event's titled The Glorious, Wondrous, and Oh-So-Dangerous Work of Authentic Interfaith Conversation. Again, you can find a link to more information about the event at wvxu.org. Coming up, we'll get an update on the Cincinnati VA Medical Center, which is under investigation. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU.